Illinois is more than 200 years old, and today we're visiting a live hour we did to celebrate from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. We've got music from the era from Mike Anderson, who calls himself the Dulcimer Guy. We talk with kids who won a statewide art contest for Illinois, and I find out what the official beer of the Illinois Bicentennial tastes like.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up on this encore edition of The 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and all this week, we've been revisiting some of our favorite conversations about history that we've had on The 21st. Today, we're taking you back to a program from last February, when we were live from the floor of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. It was the 16th president's birthday and the state's bicentennial. We covered everything from history to music to a statewide art contest celebrating that anniversary. I started off by speaking with Alan Lowe, the executive director of the Lincoln Library and Museum, and Sam Wheeler, our state historian. We started our conversation by talking about some of the museum's new acquisitions at the time, including an angry letter that Abraham Lincoln once wrote.
We have great Abraham Lincoln collections here, as well as the largest collection of Mary Lincoln documents. And every now and then, a wonderful donor will come in and say, here's something else for that. And this was a tremendous addition to our collection. Sam has more details, but one thing I love about it is it does show a fairly young Lincoln who was quite upset. And that's not always an image of Lincoln we have, but it shows he was a real human being, he had emotions, and he could get angry at times. And this was in a political context. Sam, do you want to give more details?
Sure, yeah, it's a great letter written when Mr. Lincoln was a member of the Illinois legislature, and he's writing it to a fellow Whig. Mr. Lincoln was a Whig before he became a Republican, and he's really trying to chastise this fellow Whig not to vote with the Democrats on a certain issue. And so Mr. Lincoln in this letter is using all of his power of language to really convince this guy to stick with the party and not go on the other side with the Democrats. So it's an interesting letter in the sense that Mr. Lincoln gets
is really
a little
impassioned.
Bit worked up
yeah,
in this piece.
And so, Sam, this letter was written to Andrew McCormick. He was actually one of the people who helped make Springfield our state capital. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was a member of the Long Nine, which were folks in the legislature, nine of them, that were over 6 feet tall, that voted with Lincoln on certain issues. And one of those big issues was making the state capitol here in Springfield.
Were there other, what other places were in contention for the state capitol?
There were many different places that were vying to be the state capitol. Alton was one of those towns. Here in central Illinois, Jacksonville, those folks really wanted the state capitol move there as well. But of course, you know, we had moved from Kaskaskia to Vandalia, and finally here in Springfield, it's been firmly ensconced as the state capitol ever since.
Sam, while I have you here, I feel like I have to ask, what does a state historian do? What is your job on a daily basis like?
Well, the state historian, generally speaking, is the person that really promotes state history. So a lot of work, a lot of outreach work, speaking to groups, speaking with school students all the way up through the university level, advocating for Illinois history. But functionally, what I do every day is I'm the director of research and collections and library services at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library across the way. So really maintaining that wonderful archive, the best archive in the world to do research on Lincoln as well as Illinois history.
Realize that we're also what used to be called the Illinois State Historical Library. So in addition to these tremendous Lincoln collections that Sam helps oversee, we have some 9 miles of shelving that hold Illinois collections, like just about every aspect of our history here in this state.
Which is just across the street from us. That's Alan Lowe. He's executive director of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. They are our host today. We are, I never get to say this, we're just outside the White House broadcasting
<That's right. laughs>
for our special broadcast of the 21st. Alan, this is also a really special year for the state as the state celebrates its bicentennial. You're also, Alan, on the state bicentennial committee?
Yes, both Sam and I are on the bicentennial commission, as well as James Cornelius, our Lincoln curator. All of us have been involved in helping plan out the celebrations around the state, and we have a bunch of things we're doing right here at the Library Museum related to that. In our education department, we're creating curriculum that teachers will use around the state. We've also, we're part of the Illinois Chronicles creation that is also more curriculum going out. We're most, Sam, I know, is speaking with Illinois Humanities as state historian around the state. So we're doing a bunch of stuff, but one big key part of what we're doing is our special exhibit that opens on March 23rd.
Right, that's for the library. You've got the space to just, it's going to be just across the way from us
here. That's right, in the Illinois Gallery. Opens on March 23rd. It's called From Illinois to the White House, Lincoln, Grant, Reagan, Obama. So we thought we would talk to Illinoisans about how we've contributed to national leadership over these past 200 years. We should be proud of a lot of things, and that's one of them. It's going to be a really spectacular exhibit from March 23rd through the end of the year.
And what's that? So the point of that exhibit is going to be sort of to highlight our Illinois presidents?
So looking at their lives and their legacies and kind of how Illinois helped create them as great leaders. So how Illinois played a role in that. So looking back at how they came to Illinois in the first place, only one was born here, Ronald Reagan. How they interacted with Lincoln's legacy over time. So just a lot of interesting ideas, but also some spectacular artifacts. We have great partners here and around the country. For example, the Reagan Library is loaning us the speech cards from the Berlin Wall speech that Reagan gave and a love letter with Nancy. The Chicago History Museum is loaning us the Appomattox surrender table for General Grant. We have a 3D bust that the National Gallery made of President Obama they're loaning to us. So that and many other items coming in here for that exhibit.
Sam, I think when we think about Illinois presidents, we tend to forget about President Grant. Can you help us out here a little bit?
Yeah, so at the eve of the Civil War, Ulysses S. Grant moves to join some family members in Galena. I don't know if you've ever been to Galena, but it's one of my favorite places in Illinois.
Yeah, and lots of people say that.
It's absolutely beautiful. When Grant goes there, it's sort of a low point in his life. He goes to work with his brother, and at the outbreak of the American Civil War, Grant, who'd been a military man, volunteers his services, and in so many ways, the war, that opportunity, is what makes Ulysses S. Grant. That's why we remember him today.
An interesting item in the exhibit, Grant was so down on his luck when he lived in St. Louis right before moving up here, he pawned his gold watch. And we have the pawn ticket from when he pawned his gold watch, we think maybe to be able to buy gifts for his kids at Christmas time.
Wow.
And that was just before the move here. Is that right, Sam?
That's right.
Yeah, right.
Just an amazing piece that shows a moment in Grant's life where there's desperation, but there's also opportunity here in Illinois. And so that's a real subtext in this exhibit is what is it about Illinois that's able to produce, and I will say, not just four mediocre presidents, but four pretty remarkable national leaders.
And one thing I want to brag on also, we have great partners, including the State Archives. And as part of this exhibit, we also will be displaying the 1818 State Constitution, the original Constitution of the state of Illinois.
And that brings me to ask about both of you being on the commission. What moments do you, when you're on a bicentennial commission for the state, what moments do you pick to celebrate throughout the year? How tough is that, Sam?
Well, the most important thing is to figure out ways to have all Illinoisans, any Illinoisan who wants to celebrate, to have a role for them to play. And so there's just been a lot of opportunity to have really grassroots opportunities. So one of the things that I was able to be a part of was judging minute-long videos that school kids in Illinois made. The prompt was something to learn about Illinois, and I was so proud of Illinois students. I learned a heck of a lot, and also just these stories that, what is it that makes a 12-year-old little boy or girl proud to be an Illinoisan? It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I should add, we later in the hour are going to be speaking to some of our youngest residents who are the winners of a statewide art contest that all sponsored.
That's right.
Alan,
yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Those winners will be announced today. We have an art contest every year. This year we focused on Illinois history for the bicentennial. Those winners will be announced today. Their artwork will be displayed here in the museum starting today through the rest of the year.
Yeah, there's some great art as you come into the museum of kids and the sort of their moments. Of course, it's pretty obvious the things that most of the kids picked, right? There's a lot of Lincoln up there. There's a lot of, there are a lot of birthday cakes. But Sam, as a historian, when you think about sort of our big moments for the past year, I wonder if you also, as to be celebrated during our bicentennial, I wonder if we also think back on moments that maybe are not happy ones, but important parts of our history that we need to learn from as well.
Yeah, history is multifaceted. Certainly there's things that we're very proud of that we accomplished as a state, but there's also moments where we went through hard times as a state. The American Civil War certainly was a rough time in Illinois history, but we remember 252,000 soldiers that volunteered to serve the Union that ultimately ended American slavery. The Great Chicago Fire, for instance, is another one of those episodes that brought such hardships to the folks in Illinois. But the story that we tell is one of rebirth, rebuilding, and making Chicago one of the greatest cities in the world. We also have other incidents like the state's history with race. Race riots, for instance, one in Springfield that was absolutely horrible here in 1908. But again, the story is the birth of the NAACP comes out of that. And so there is a stories of talking about challenges, but the thing about Illinoisans is they always meet those challenges.
Alan, there's another major acquisition I wanted to ask you about that you all just announced for the library as well that will be new on display. This is another painting.
That's a piece
of art.
Yeah, it is. And again, a wonderful donor came to us and gave us this wonderful piece. It joins this collection of art we have that is unrivaled, I believe, of Lincoln images. And Sam, I know you have more details in terms of the history of this piece, but it's toured around. It has a great history as a piece, but also it's a great work of art as well.
Yeah, it's I love the scale. It's 5 feet by 7 feet. It fills the library atrium so beautifully. And it's a picture that was done in the late 19th century. And it shows Abraham Lincoln. He's just chopped down a tree. He's taking a rest.
This is like a young Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, it's a Lincoln that I would, by the looks of it, is his first moments in Illinois. He's done a little manual labor, and he takes a moment out to read a book, leaning against the tree. It speaks beautifully to our mission over in the library.
Can you remind us what age Abraham Lincoln was when he came here?
Yeah, so Abraham Lincoln legally could have left his parents and taken off at the age of 21, but he didn't leave immediately. He traveled with them at the age of 21 from Indiana to Illinois and helped them get settled here in the Prairie State before embarking out on his own.
And there's such great history of different points around the state where President Lincoln was. Sam, I know it's really hard. We just have a couple minutes left, but I wonder what points to you geographically kind of stand out? And since we're here in Springfield, I mean, there's so much history here, right? And within the Capitol, the circuit, what kind of stands out for you?
Sure. Well, as you know, if you travel around anywhere in Illinois, they've got an Abraham Lincoln slept here story.
Yes.
You can't tell the story of the land of Lincoln without a real Lincoln connection. So I'm probably biased, but the fact is he spent more time in Springfield than he spent in any other town in Illinois. This is where he decided to literally build his home. He got married, had his children here. He served in the state legislature. This was the rock that he built his law practice upon. And ultimately, this is where he's buried. And so here in Springfield, we have the honor this is Mr. Lincoln's final resting place, and it's very apt. This is the place where he spent the most time.
Alan, as we just have about a minute or so left,
sure.
Anything else that we should be thinking about? You mentioned the exhibit.
But every day here, we kind of live in the world of Abraham Lincoln. It's a pretty awesome job, frankly, to come in and realize that we're helping preserve this legacy and pass it on to the next generation.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, there's lots more here from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. I want to thank Alan Lowe, who's executive director of the museum. Also, Sam Wheeler, state historian. Both of you, thanks for being with me. I appreciate
it. Thank you for being here.
Stay tuned. We're going to continue with some musical performances. We're going to be hearing more about the music of President Lincoln's era. And we have the brewer behind the Centennial Beer. Hand of Fate Brewing Company is going to be joining us next from Petersburg, Illinois, with 1818 Prairie State Farmhouse Ale. You're listening to a special live broadcast of the 21st from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boudou, and if you're just joining us, we're revisiting our show from last February when we were live from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum to celebrate President Lincoln's birthday. Last year was also, of course, Illinois' 200th birthday, and there were lots of commemorative items made for that occasion. Maybe you've seen the stamps. They're still out there, but one of them was a nice official cold one. Hand of Fate Brewing Company in Petersburg, just outside of Springfield, produced a beer called 1818 Prairie State Farmhouse Ale. It was chosen as the official beer of the state's bicentennial. Mike Allison is Hand of Fate's founder and head brewer, and I asked him just how one goes about making a beer to represent Illinois.
Well, the first thing that we want to do is make sure we use as many Illinois products in it. Illinois' largest economic thing is agriculture, so a farmhouse ale seemed like the way to go with it. Farmhouse ales are traditionally brewed with whatever crops are around, so it was important to use Illinois products in that. Barley is the base malt of this, and Illinois is not a big barley state, but all the other grains that are in it, the corn, wheat, and oats are all big crops in Illinois. We were able to get hops from a hop farm in Lewiston, Illinois, Hallowed Hops. And then the saisons are farmhouse ales, are really yeast-inspired beers. There's really flavorful yeast strains that go into them. And Omega Yeast Labs in Chicago, Illinois, has developed their own hybrid saison yeast strain, so we use that in it. So the ingredients in it are all about Illinois.
So I'm excited. You brought some here. I'm excited to try it. But first I should ask, how were you chosen as the official bicentennial beer?
Well, the bicentennial committee decided they wanted an official beer for the bicentennial, which I think is very cool. I don't think any other state has ever had an official state-endorsed beer, so this is kind of a big deal for Illinois. They had a competition at the Illinois State Fair. They invited any Illinois breweries that wanted to participate to bring a beer, any beer that they wanted. And
yeah. So, what did you think about? Should we?
Yeah. That's
all right. Oh, there we go. All right. What did you think about when you were putting this together in terms of what you wanted it to taste like?
Well, at the time, the beer that was at the competition was not this beer. It would just bring a beer that you thought that would do well at the state fair, and then the winners got to develop what would be the official one-off beer for this.
Mm-hmm.
So the beer that we took was actually a cream ale, which is one of our flagship beers. And cream ale is one of the main ingredients of that is corn, and that's one of the reasons we use it as our flagship beer is because corn is king in Illinois. This cream ale had peach black tea and ginger added to it. Very refreshing and light and easy to drink at the Illinois State Fair, and it did very well.
And so this is a really smooth, this is really light.
Yes, our goal with this was to create a beer that is true to our craft roots, but still approachable by people who are not yet into drinking craft beer.
Okay. So I can taste sort of, how is this dinner? You guys have, at Hand of Fate, you will have 12 beers on tap all the time. Does this taste very different than than your other beers that you have?
Not really. We have a wide variety of beers, so they all taste very different from each other. We do another Saison, but it's a little higher alcohol, a little bit more complex than what this is. Kind of more in line with what craft beer drinkers looking for a complex Saison would want. We wanted this to be a little bit less complex, a little bit more approachable by, people are even drinking, more mainstream beers.
So Governor Rauner tapped the first keg in Chicago last week. Did you get to serve him a glass?
He actually served me a glass.
He served you?
He tapped the keg. He pulled the handle, poured the first beers, and served everybody there. So it was really cool.
Where can people try some for themselves, Mike?
Right now, it is available draft across the entire state through Breakthrough Beverage. I don't have a list of all the places that's on tap right now. But if they
you're
have
distributing through Binnie's as well, right? So
yes.
Folks have a Binnie's.
Yeah, they
can
have
also
a Binnie's. They have a Binnie's that has draft.
I see.
Which not all of them do.
Okay.
So right now, if they have a place they like to go and they have draft beer, they can tell them to have them contact the Breakthrough rep and get it on tap.
And, of course, if they're in Central Illinois, they could head to Petersburg and they could go to Hand of Fate.
Absolutely. We have it on tap along with 11 other delicious beers.
All right. So that's Mike Allison. He's the founder, and he's with Hand of Fate Brewing Company in Petersburg, Illinois. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Earlier, we talked about some of the history of Lincoln's era, but now I want to turn to something we don't often necessarily think about, the music. We're joined now by Christian McWhorter, a research historian at the Library and Museum, author of The Power and Popularity of Music in the Civil War. Hi, Christian. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great.
And also with us on the other side over here is folk performer Mike Anderson, the quote-unquote dulcimer guy. We've been listening to Mike's music all morning. He's been performing at the museum. He's doing an interactive music and story event called The Times of Abraham Lincoln. Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking time off of playing over there to come over here and play for everybody else who's listening.
It's nice to be over here.
So, Mike, you've brought your dulcimer, the jaw harp, and bones. First of all, can you explain these instruments? And these are instruments people would have played during Lincoln's era?
Yes, very much so. The jaw harp, world-class instrument. They found one in King Tut's tomb. It goes back that far.
So this is really small. I'm trying to describe it for folks who are listening on the radio. It kind of looks like a scissors, right?
Almost a little scissors. It's got an iron frame, and then it has a middle spring steel spring that goes...
Ah, okay.
And that's the vibration of making the sound. The soldiers like these a lot because they were made by the blacksmith, local blacksmith, and they're portable. And you can get a lot of sound out of them. And you put your teeth on them.
So that's how you play it?
That's how you play it.
You're putting that in your mouth?
Yeah, I'm not in my mouth. I'm putting my teeth on the frame.
Oh, interesting.
Which makes your skull your sound box.
The
emptier your sound box is, the better it sounds. And I'm supposed to be good. But your teeth are on it. Then you lower the lips. Then you add air.
Wow.
Then you move your tongue. And it's said that this is the only instrument Abraham Lincoln played. Now, some people also say the harmonica because he brought it up at the...
Christian, you're the historian. You want to weigh in here?
There is a story where Lincoln pulls one of those out of his pocket and plays it and makes a joke about the fact that a political opponent has a whole band.
Was
this at the Lincoln-Douglas debate?
Yes.
Okay.
Douglas has a band, and Lincoln goes, well, this is my band, and they just
that's
plays
right.
that.
Yeah. Okay. And we don't know if that's true or not, but it's a good story.
It is, absolutely.
Christian, before we get into Mike playing for us a little bit, what kind of role did music play in people's lives back then? Let's start with before the Civil War, because Mike mentioned the job. Jaw's harp and that being something that soldiers maybe was easy to carry around with. And before the Civil War, what role did music play in people's lives?
It's still very personal to us now, but it was almost more personal to them because there was no recorded sound. So if you wanted to perform music, you wanted to hear music, you would perform it yourself and often in a group. It was things families did together, it was things friends did together. They'd sing along, they would play along. And it was really a thing that bonded groups and communities together.
And what do we know about our President Lincoln specifically? I was mentioning to you before we got on air, I've been reading They Knew Lincoln, where that author, Kate Mazur, is going to be on the show soon. And I was really struck by the accounts of President Lincoln visiting camps in Washington, D.C. and singing along with African-American spirituals and how moved he was by that and how much he enjoyed singing.
That's a long story, but Lincoln was similar to a lot of Northerners during the war, where before the war, they didn't really know what actual African-American music sounded like. They had this genre of music called minstrelsy, which was kind of a caricature of what they thought African-American music sounded like. Then during the war, when they get into the South and they start to encounter actual enslaved people and they hear their music, it sounds completely different from what they're used to. And there's this whole kind of subculture of Northerners, white Northerners during the war, who start to record this music. They write it down and share it with each other, or they go to the contraband camps and hear it, and they're just completely blown away by it because it's nothing they've ever heard before.
That's Christian McWhorter. He's a research historian at the Lincoln Library and Museum. Mike Anderson's with us as well. Mike, let's go back. Can we play some pre-Civil War music? What can you play for us now?
On the jaw harp?
Whatever you want to play. You've got a lot of things there.
I've got a lot of things there. The... instruments of that time, the jaw harp was obviously there, the bones. The dulcimer is, and this is something that ethnomusicologists could have a good long argument about. The dulcimer is supposed to be the only American instrument we have. And the oldest one we found is 1690, the Pennsylvania Dutch. But it's just a melody drone instrument. They're all over Europe, so you could get into that argument if you wish. But it was used in the log homes of the Appalachian Mountains. Lincoln would have been familiar with it down in Kentucky. And they've slowly made their way into the Illinois area. And it's just mine's got four strings, but typically they were three-stringed instruments, diatonic, which means they have no sharps and flats, which means they're very easy.
And were they easy? So by that you mean easy to play, but also easy to build?
Yes.
Okay.
Both of those. It's very easy to play. They're made to be played by people who have no, they have no idea what they're doing. Okay, they've got music in them, and they can make it come out their fingers. So they don't have any musical education, but they do have music. It's two different things. And they would have used a stick, and they would have just slid the stick up and down, which gives you a little twangy sound, which is the traditional sound of the dulcimer. The old wildwood flower.
That's lovely. So this is somebody who does know what he's doing, the dulcimer guy, Mike Anderson, who's here with us performing. And Mike, so you, the dulcimer, that's the dulcimer there. You mentioned the bones also.
Yes. And this is a mountain dulcimer. There's also a hammer dulcimer, which is a whole different creature, which is much, much older.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, the bones are simply...
They look like bones.
They are bones. These are what's... myself and a banjo player were driving down to perform at a theme park down in Missouri, and there was this cow who had been in the field like 3 years too long.
Oh, boy.
And we harvested the cow, and this is his front legs.
Really?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, myself and this other banjo player, and I don't want to say his name because there's people here who know who he is.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, these are his front femur.
I'm not going to ask if the cow's owner knew that you did this.
We'll just go right by that. It was just a skeleton out there.
Oh,
we
okay.
Said, oh, look at that, you know. But another ancient instrument, and they... You get this tickety-tickety sort of sound if you're playing. Once again, soldiers like these a lot because they're portable, and they were made by last night's dinner, you know, so... And they would do a set of rhythm, and you could just sing songs.
Yeah.
You know, like, you get a line, I'll get a pole, honey, bum, bum. You get a line, I'll get a pole, babe. You get a line, I'll get a pole, and we'll go down that crawdad hole. Honey, baby, mine, boodaloo-doo, boop, the bones.
That's Mike Anderson, who's with us, the dulcimer guy, along with Christian McWhorter. Christian, as from a research historian standpoint, you know, Mike was mentioning soldiers. How did the Civil War sort of change the role of music? And was it different? Was music different depending on, the music wasn't different depending on what side you were on, were they?
Each side had their own hits. Obviously, the South had Dixie and the North had the Battle Cry of Freedom. But music became very politicized during the war, which isn't really all that surprising. Before the war, the songs people tended to like were these kind of love songs, sentimental pieces, minstrel songs we mentioned before. But during the war, a lot of people really start looking to songs that have political context or political lyrics, and especially the soldiers. The soldiers turned to this music as a way to sort out what they're fighting and dying for. And as a result, the kind of the songs the soldiers like are the songs that become really popular. So a lot of the songs we now associate with the Civil War were the hits in the armies, and then they spread from the armies into the home front.
So I'm thinking of things like the Suwannee River. Like, was that a song from that era?
That predates the Civil War. That's
okay.
A minstrel song. That's by
okay.
Stephen Foster,
right.
Who's a legendary, you know, songwriter.
Uh-huh.
And that music stayed popular during the war, but then you add these kind of marches, these more militaristic songs
okay.
onto it, like what we now call the Battle Hymn of the Republic,
okay.
The Battle Cry of Freedom. Dixie's a minstrel song, but it gets played like a march. You know, those types of songs become really big during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And would we say that, I know that when we think about sort of Dixie, you mentioned that, that's something we still hear about today. I don't know if both of you want to weigh in here. Would there be a style of music that you all think would be native to Illinois in that vein?
not particularly native to Illinois, but spirituals, like hymn type songs, mm-hmm. were really big here in the countryside. And then in Chicago and things like that, that would have been where Chicago actually, a lot of the big Northern War songs come out of Chicago. Marching Through Georgia, The Battle Cry of Freedom, those are both published in Chicago by songwriters up there, worked for a firm called Root and Katie. So actually, Illinois played a major role with Civil War music.
And when we think about the instruments, Mike, are there regional differences and different? You mentioned that's not a mountain dulcimer that you're playing.
No, this
there.
Is a mountain
that
dulcimer.
That is a mountain dulcimer.
Mountain dulcimer, yes.
And so did people play different types of dulcimers based on where they were?
The mountain dulcimers you found mainly up and down the Appalachian Mountains in the log homes and the hoots and the hollers, mm-hmm. and the, like I say, the little log homes. The dulcimer made it into Illinois. But this was never a predominantly Illinois instrument. I know when I was working at a stagecoach stop not too far from here, and to justify my being there, because I used to build these, we finally found an advertisement in the Peoria newspaper for dulcimers.
From when?
1850.
Wow.
Which actually was a little bit late for the stagecoach stop, but they let me stay anyway. So we kind of hedged history right there. In Illinois, you had, you were talking about the Illinois music. It was a lot of those people coming up and down the rivers or coming into Illinois to work, and they were carrying mainly fiddles and banjos, if they were carrying anything at all. The dulcimer got left out in the mountains because it's just too quiet. It was made for log homes. It wasn't made for public things. The dulcimer's extremely quiet.
Mike, we're going to take a break, but can you play some music for us as we go out into the break?
Sure.
Thank you. And stay tuned, you're going to hear a little bit more of this after on the other side of this. Thanks for tuning into this special encore edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You've been listening to a rebroadcast of our show from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. We've been hearing music of President Lincoln's era from Christian McWhorter, research historian with the museum, as well as Mike Anderson. He's the dulcimer guy. Let's get back to that conversation. Christian, one last question for you. We started talking about President Lincoln's sort of taste in music. What were his favorite hymns? And it was really hymns for a lot of it. Was hymns for him versus folk music or both?
It was both for Lincoln. Actually, I would say by the time Lincoln died, Lincoln was into pretty much any kind of music you could name. But growing up, Lincoln came from, a fairly poor background. And so a lot of it was folk songs with Lincoln. We know he had a lot of favorites. He did apparently sing out of hymnals, but he mostly grew up liking these joke songs. Songs about,
like what? What do you mean by that?
One song is a song called None Can Love Like an Irishman, which lists all these different nationalities from around the world, but none of them can love like an Irishman, and the whole joke is supposed to be how virile and masculine Irishmen are. And we know he liked dirty jokes, and a lot of the songs he liked too were like that, and some of them haven't come down to us, but we know his friends would say that those were the kind of tunes Lincoln liked.
Yeah, that's a different side of President Lincoln. We don't hear very much about
him. Yeah, he was a real jokey guy. That's why people liked him, right? If you hung out with him, he was cracking jokes all the time and stuff. And his musical taste reflected that, too. And actually, when he became president, it's one of the things that Democrats in the opposition made fun of him for, was that he had crude taste because he liked these kind of things.
And so what songs from that era remain today that we would remember?
Any of we mentioned Stephen Foster before. Stephen Foster songs would be big. Oh, Susanna, Suwannee River, My Old Kentucky Home. And from the war, the two biggies are Dixie and the Battle Hymn of the Republic, definitely.
Mike, can you play for us? What can you play for us now that we might remember here?
Well, with the jaw harp, and which the story goes that Lincoln played the jaw harp. And according to something I read somewhere, which you never know about how accurate all this stuff is, but the only song he could play on the jaw harp was Oh Susanna, and according to him, he played it fair poorly. So I'll do a little bit of Oh Susanna for you, okay?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. I'm bound for Louisiana, my true love for to see. It rained so hard the day I left, the weather it was dry. Sun so hot or froze to death, Susanna, don't you cry. Well, oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I'm bound for Alabama with the banjo on my knee, yeah.
Thank you so much. So that's Mike Anderson. He's a folk musician. He's also known as the Dulcimer Guy. I want to thank Christian McWhorter as well for giving us some of the research history behind this. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is
fun. Thanks for having us.
So we've got music. We've got art now also to celebrate. We've been hearing about the activities that the museum had planned for our state's 200th anniversary. One of them was an art contest for students of all ages from schools all over the state. The theme was Happy Birthday, Illinois. We are going to be hearing from some of the winners in just a minute. But first, I'm joined by Genevieve Kaplan. She's the Director of Education for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. And here with us is also one of the judges, Betsy Dollar. She's Executive Director of the Springfield Art Association. Both of you, thanks for being here with me. Welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Genevieve, as we said, the theme was Happy Birthday, Illinois. When you and organizers of this contest decided on that, what kind of entries were you hoping to try to get from the students?
We were really hoping that we would get entries that depicted Illinois, maybe its symbols, and just really a celebratory tone. And we ended up getting that and so much more. We have artworks that are in the shape of birthday cakes. We have lots of President Lincolns. And we also have things that represented local history. Anywhere from the person who discovered Pluto to UFO sightings over Galesburg that took place 50 years
wow.
ago.
Okay, so you got it. Betsy, what were you hoping to get in terms of artistic expression? Was there something in particular you were looking for?
No, I wasn't really looking for anything specific other than, you know, sort of a creative approach and a good, you know, sort of design sense and balance of something that, you know, if you're thinking about creating a poster or something promotional for and celebratory, yeah, so we were looking for color and excitement and, you know, just sort of visual attraction.
And so we have one of the runners-up in the grades 6 through 8 division with us. She's a 6th grader from Franklin Middle School, Lily Ha. Hey, Lily, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Hi, thank you.
So congratulations. So we were looking at your art earlier. Can you describe for us what you decided to draw?
So basically, since Illinois is actually also nicknamed Land of Lincoln, and Lincoln really symbolizes Illinois, I decided to include him in the Happy Birthday Illinois theme. And basically, he's holding his birthday cake since he really symbolizes Illinois.
And yeah, and your birthday cake, the cake he's holding also has flowers on them, right?
Yes.
What flowers did you pick?
Violets, which are Illinois' state flower.
And so that's why you picked the violets
yeah.
for that, too. Wow. Well, thanks, Lily. So what, when you heard about the contest, why did you just decide, well, this has to have President Lincoln on it?
Because art is one of my favorite hobbies.
It is.
Yes, and 2 years ago, my grandparents visited us from South Korea. And at that time, they were doing a display of the art. And my grandparents really liked it. And so I decided to try it after I heard about the contest.
Oh, and is art something you would like to do maybe more than just a hobby?
Yeah, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Well, Lily, thank you for being with me. Lily Ha is a 6th grader from Franklin Middle School. She was a runner-up in the 6th through 8th division. Thanks, Lily.
Thank you.
So, Genevieve, what did you learn, I wonder, about Illinois in terms of, we just heard Lily and her perspective of the cake. There are some great cakes. There's a flying Lincoln. There's a Lincoln that's like flying over the Capitol, which might be one of my favorites. What did you learn? Were there any surprises for you?
There's always surprises, especially when kids are depicting local history. You get to learn so much. We had one poster that came in with a depiction of a ketchup bottle, which several of the judges were a bit confused by. And then I remembered that when the museum went out to the state fair, one of our trivia questions that we had asked was about a gigantic ketchup bottle that is like a town landmark. that people could go and get their picture taken with. And so we all had a bit of a teaching moment around a large bottle of ketchup.
Let's meet another student. Braden Buxton is in third grade at Owen Marsh Elementary School in Springfield. He was also a runner-up in the K-5 division. Hey, Braden, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me. So what did you decide to draw, Braden?
I decided to draw it in the president's office, and I made the top letter, actually. I made it to be the Washington, D.C. on the top, and then I drawed the couple of wares. It was like the flag. I kind of drawed that, like the flag kind of texture on the cake. And then I also thought of it being in the president's office because it's kind of the president, D.C., and that's where Abraham Lincoln was. So then I drawed, like, the little chair right there.
Uh-huh. And so by the president's office, do you mean the White House? In the White House, then.
Yeah.
Do you like drawing?
Yeah.
Why do you like drawing?
Because my dad kind of liked to draw a lot. And I love drawing because mostly because I have lots of crayons and supplies at home, and I'm kind of bored when I do stuff.
And so drawing is something that keeps you not being bored, I bet, huh? All right. Well, Braden, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it. Betsy, can I ask, how important you think the role of art contests play for children? And we're hearing Braden and Lily talk about the role art plays in their life. How important do you think contests are like this to maybe nurture artistic expression for kids?
I think they're important. I'm very much a supporter of art education and keeping art very present for children. So the competitive side, yes, that serves a purpose in many cases, giving teachers more of an excuse to utilize the arts, because sometimes they say, well, if it's, I don't have time to fit it into the curriculum. So if you give them an excuse to fit it into the curriculum, that's very helpful, and I'm happy to see that. But I'd rather that, like, both of these students really like to make art on their own and they fill their time with it. That's what I like to see, less than the competitive side.
Sure.
Of it. But I do like it as an excuse to keep it in the classroom, because so many classrooms are pushing it out.
We've got another artist with us. Hannah Hanzo is a senior at Woodland High School. Hey, Hannah, thanks for being here too.
Hello.
And you're also an artist. How long have you been doing your art?
As long as I really can remember, ever since I've been able to hold a pencil, I've been drawing.
Yeah, and how did you hear about the contest?
It was something that my art teacher, she wanted to integrate it as, like, not only as a project, but she always tries to get us involved in these sort of things because she feels like it's important for some of us more, like, developed artists to get a chance to win something.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do?
I had Abraham Lincoln, like his face, right in the center, and then I had a road with a whole bunch of nature on the left and some buildings on the right, because nature is like a pretty big thing in Illinois. We have like a lot of roads, we have Starved Rock and everything, and then we have a lot of older architecture too in some of our older towns, so I wanted to try and capture that as well.
Now, what kind of, when you're thinking about your art, I wonder where you draw your influences from.
I mostly taught myself. So a lot of it is like coming from my own head, but I definitely did a lot of copying when I was younger from different kinds of artists. I integrated a lot of different art styles to create my own. So I can't name anyone in specific, but I definitely drew from a lot of different places.
Well, congratulations, Hannah. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Hannah is one of the winners of the art contest that was sponsored by the Abraham Lincoln Library and Museum to celebrate the state's bicentennial. Genevieve Kaplan is with us as well. She's the director of education. Genevieve, when you're thinking about collaborating with kids and with teachers, I wonder how often you all do things like this where you have art.
Our art contest is an annual thing that we do. This is actually the fourth year we've done it, and we're hoping to expand it even more next year. We had almost 500 entries this year from all over the state.
Wow.
Going from Chicago and the northern suburbs all the way down to the furthest south points of Illinois and stretching from east to west.
It was a really diverse grouping of art styles as well as ages, and we've been really excited with the turnout that we've had this year.
And we have one last artist with us. Hannah Hadley was all a runner-up in the 9 through 12 division, and she's also a senior at Woodlawn High. Hey, Hannah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So in terms of the in terms of what you did, what did you draw and why did you decide to do it?
I drew Lincoln's hat, and then bursting forth from that, I drew a what I think represents Illinois as a whole, because I knew a bunch of people were going to just draw a Lincoln portrait. I wanted to tie in everything.
Yeah, so there's a lot. So they, what did you tie in?
Lake Michigan, the Vermilion, Pluto, some graffiti, because when I traveled to Chicago, there's lots of art there in the form of graffiti, and the Willis Tower and a bunch of other buildings in bright colors.
Yeah, so lots of different things to celebrate the state's bicentennial. And for you, is art something that you want to do? Is it career?
No, it's more of a hobby, but it's a really good thing that helps me kind of lay back after school and a bunch of stressful things in life, you know.
Yeah, well, art is a good escape for lots of people. So thank you to Hannah. Thanks for being with us, Hannah Hadley. I want to thank Betsy Dollar, who's executive director of the Springfield Art Association, and Genevieve Kaplan, who directs education here at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. This art, Genevieve, is on display for how long?
It is up until at least the end of the year, and probably just before Lincoln's birthday next year, when we have a whole new set to go up.
That does it for us today. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. When we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. We're also on Facebook. If you want to search there for the 21st, you can like us, and it's another way to comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. All those links, if you want to leave us a voicemail as well, send us an email, or remember our social media handles, all you have to remember is our website. That's 21stshow.org. We've also got all of our past shows archived there. You can find us also most places you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR One. Search for The 21ST. We're produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, and Alan Montesilio, who's our senior producer. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening.